Shalom and welcome to State of a Nation. I'm Israeli spokesman Alon Levy. Before we start, a word of warning. This episode will be difficult to listen to. It was difficult to record, and that's because it contains graphic descriptions of sexual abuse. So this isn't an episode to listen to with kids in the back of the car, or if, for whatever reason, the topic of sexual violence is one that's likely to cause you significant distress or trauma. Today is International Women's Day, usually in Israel a day of celebration, but today that couldn't be further from reality. And reflecting this, today's episode is about the horrific sexual atrocities carried out by the Hamas regime. It's about the massive, deliberate, and systematic use of sexual violence on October 7th and since October 7th. Not only committing acts of rape and gang rape, mutilating and desecrating their victims' bodies, sexual violence at the Nova Festival, at the kibbutzim, at military bases, and in the Hamas terror dungeons where we fear that Hamas is starving and executing and raping the hostages right now. Because as painful as it is, that's what the survivors of Hamas captivity are reporting back. And the UN's top expert on the subject, the Special Representative for Sexual Violence in Conflict, Pamela Patton, is reporting clear and convincing information that the hostages are being subjected to rape, sexualized torture, and cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. Yes, right now. Shockingly, Hamas's sexual violence on 10/7 and since 10/7 hasn't sparked a wave of protest and outrage around the world. Instead, the initial disbelief gave way to widespread denial, and especially for Israeli and Jewish women, that's meant widespread disillusionment about the organizations and public figures they thought were their friends and allies. After the UN's top expert concluded Hamas committed mass sexual violence on 10/7 and is raping the hostages, Israel has been calling on the UN Security Council to designate Hamas a terror organization and condemn its atrocities.
And just hours ago, the United States, United Kingdom, and France heeded the request of Israel's foreign minister and have officially called for a UN Security Council to meet and review the report's disturbing findings.
I want to understand better what the Hamas regime did on 10/7 and what we fear it's doing to the hostages, so I'm sitting down for a difficult conversation with Ayelet Razin Bet-Or, a leading advocate fighting to raise awareness about Hamas's use of sexual violence as a weapon of war and helping Israel piece together this horrific jigsaw. Ayelet is the legal advisor to the Association of Rape Crisis Centers in Israel and an experienced criminal prosecutor known for combating gender-based violence. We're filming this podcast because we need the world to understand what we are up against and what our enemy, the Hamas regime, will do again and again until it is stopped. How do we know what it did and is doing? How do we support the victims? And what is the state of our nation in the aftermath and in the grips of such unspeakable horror? Welcome to State of a Nation.
Breaking news out of Israel this morning.
Shocking hostage taking.
Hundreds of Israelis are dead.
I want to bring in Israeli government spokesman.
What happens when a four-day pause?
How do you resolve this?
Where does this go?
You can't do this.
Ayelet Razin Bet-Or, welcome to State of a Nation.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'll ask you a question I ask all the guests on the podcast, but I think it's especially important because the next hour is going to be, I think, difficult for both of us. How are you?
I'm okay because I have, you know, like eyes on the ball. I have mission. As long as I have the eyes on the mission, I'm doing fine. I know I have to have strength, resilience to do what I'm doing, and I'm fine.
Because as someone who's having to deal with this on a day-to-day basis, I mean, do you feel that you're traumatized by what you are being exposed to every day or desensitized to it? I know that I've been talking about these atrocities for so long that in a horrible way, I've become desensitized, and sometimes it hits me like a punch in the gut when it suddenly sinks how awful it is, the things I'm talking about. Are you feeling traumatized, desensitized? Where are you on that scale?
No, I'm traumatized. It's, you know, it will sink in, I'm sure. But now I'm still very, on it. The day that I will feel that I'm desensitized, I'll resign from this mission because you can't be numb when you do what you're doing.
So tell me about this mission. What have you been doing since October 7th to investigate, draw attention to, advocate on behalf of the victims of the sexual violence perpetrated during the October 7 massacre? And it's important to emphasize, and we'll talk about this later, since October 7th.
Well, I'll say in general, we have two missions. One is collecting the pieces of the puzzle and putting them together to understand this narrative and the whole story of the atrocities and everything that happened on October 7th and afterwards. So it's collecting and putting them together. And the and also working with authorities to understand that this is part of the story, and they need to be trauma informed in all the responses they give to victims, to eyewitnesses, also all that. And also we have because of, I'm working with a team, a group of experts in different disciplinary fields of law. And we've been doing a lot of work with the international community, international professional community, on demanding response, professional response to what happened in Israel on October 7th. So those are...
Take me back to October 7th and tell me how you began to realize what was going on, not only the mass atrocities of October 7th, but specifically the sexual violence, because I remember being glued to the TV and Twitter and seeing initial reports coming in of acts of rape, the horrific, quote-unquote, iconic images of that poor girl, Naama Levy, with the blood-stained trousers, and not wanting to believe what I was saying and what I was hearing. Tell me through how you began to understand what was going on.
Yeah, well, I was on vacation with my family in Spain. We started getting these reports about everything that's happening, terrorists all over Israel and southern Israel. And then because of my prior positions and my expertise, I was a prosecutor, I was in the rape crisis centers, I started getting questions about, did you hear that there's also these elements in all the violence happening of sexual assault? And the descriptions were horrific, just like you said.
So let's understand what happened on October 7th in terms of the sexual atrocities. And I'll use this as another opportunity to remind listeners and viewers, we are going to speak very openly and very frankly about issues that are really horrific and will rightly make people uncomfortable. So another warning before we progress onto this. My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, on October 7th, there were mass acts of rape, correct?
I think we can talk about tens of incidents of rape, but I'm very, very cautious in what I'm saying. When
gang rape
professional
as well.
Gang rapes, yes, and gang rapes, also mutilations. We're talking about the professional term is gender-based violence. It's violence aimed at gender, a gender of a person, male or female. So it's rapes, it's gang rapes, it's mutilation, it's sexual harassment, it's touching of intimate parts.
Pedophilia as well?
There are indications of sexual assault of teenagers, at least two teenagers, yes.
And necrophilia too? There was sexual abuse of dead bodies? Is that something we know as well?
There is a testimony, two testimonies about that, that during rape, I'm sorry for the description, but this is what we're talking about. During the rape, the victim was murdered. So, and the act continued, the sexual act continued. So I guess, yes.
I want to understand what the evidentiary basis is for the sexual atrocities of October 7th. What we know, how we know it, because the initial aftermath was chaos, as so many bodies were rushed for burial.
Yes.
But we do have extensive evidence, very widespread indications of sexual violence committed by Hamas. Tell me, what do we know from witnesses? Witnesses and from footage. Is there footage that we have telling us about the sexual atrocities of October 7th?
Yes, I'll divide it into the different kinds of evidence and indications. It is important to say we're at the beginning of the investigation. We're still at war. Many of the first responders are still now in combat in Gaza, so they're not available to take testimony from. Many of the survivors and eyewitnesses are in trauma. They're survivors by themselves of different, acts of violence. And also there's a lot of footage coming in all the time from things that, from different technological devices brought by the IDF from Gaza. I'll sum it up.
Okay.
What we know now is the tip of the iceberg. I'll start with survivors. There has been a publication by the Ministry of Welfare that five survivors from the Nova Party who identified themselves as sexual assault victims, again, from the Nova Party, four women and one man, approached them.
Living survivors.
We know it has been published that there are five. That's one thing. There are two hostages that came back from captive that talked about being touched. There's also at least seven testimonies of eyewitnesses, direct eyewitnesses, to rapes and gang rapes
from at the Nova Festival.
At the Nova Festival. That's what has been published again. There are also numerous, and it's really the tip of the iceberg, testimonies of first responders who came to the army bases, to the kibbutzim, and to the Nova Party. And you see the same descriptions of, again, sorry, trigger warning, bleeding pelvises in three arenas, bleeding mm-hmm. pelvises. You see stripped naked or partly naked bodies. There are testimonies of, and that's a different kind of testimonies. There's the first responders who are on site, and there's the people who treated either the bodies or wounded people. That's a different kind of testimony. There's massive shooting of genitals. There are testimonies of cut off breasts in two arenas.
There's that horrific story that the father whose eye was gouged out, his wife had her breast chopped off, one child had a foot and the other one fingers.
Yes.
Really horrific.
Yes. And I'm sorry we're going into this, but you have to understand, first of all, the effort you have to put into cutting a woman's breast. And when you understand that in three different main scenes of what happened on October 7th, you see the same fingerprints. You see bleeding pelvises. You see cut off breasts. You see stripped bodies. You understand what they came to do. What we do see, again, three scenes of masses of bodies with that the genital areas were targeted, that are bleeding.
We have photographic evidence from the forensic investigations of the deliberate targeting of sexual organs.
Yes.
You know, for us here in Israel, and I think it's a point that many people abroad don't understand, it has been October 7th every day since October 7th. Time has stood still, and it will be October 7th until all the hostages are back. We record this as 134 hostages are still trapped in the Hamas terror dungeons. 32 of them are dead. I hope that by the time this episode is released, we will have managed to rescue more, secure a framework to get the release of them, but they're still trapped there. I try to raise the alarm and say, we need to get these hostages out because we fear they are being starved and tortured and executed. We know that. And raped.
Yes.
Now, I've been very careful in my media interviews not to say anything that the hostage survivors have not been saying in their testimony. What do we know from the hostage survivors, the survivors of Hamas captivity, about the sexual abuse taking place against the hostages in the Hamas terror dungeons right now?
We have four hostages, released hostages, women that talk about these issues. They saw with their own eyes, for instance, a demand that they shower with the door open. They heard testimonies from other hostages still in captive that they are raped by numerous terrorists with a gun put to their head.
That horrific testimony from Goldstein Almog about sexual assault at gunpoint.
Repeatedly. Not one incident. It's important to talk about
at
that.
At gunpoint.
There's a grave concern that they are getting pregnant from these actions. And the hostages need to be, all of them, need to be released immediately. Not only because of this, but also because of this.
And we heard that horrific testimony from Aviva Siegel at the Knesset about how the terrorists are dressing the women up as dolls, using them as puppets on a string to do whatever they want, whenever they want. These are hostage survivor Aviva Siegel's words.
They are considered spoils of war. They took many hostages. Many of them are women. They're their property.
I mean, the hostage survivor testimonies are telling us that the hostages are being held as sex slaves and repeatedly raped by Hamas terrorists. One of the many reasons why it's imperative that we get the hostages out immediately, and they cannot stay there a minute later because of what we know about the sexual abuse. And yet, while that is happening, and we fear that these hostages are being raped in the Hamas terror dungeons, the world's response has been deafening in its silence. The condemnations of the October 7 massacre from UN officials have often felt very perfunctory, lip service. It famously took UN women, 50 how many days to express any concern about the sexual violence, and even that was hedged in terms that were very problematic from an Israeli perspective. As someone who has spent so long campaigning for women's issues and women's rights, how do you feel about that? Because I know there's been a lot of people who have felt very betrayed by these organizations and their, what it feels like a basic lack of sympathy or empathy towards Israeli victims.
Yeah, well, two things. First of all, it's not only UN Women, it's also UNICEF, you know, supposed to take in consideration all children of the world, World Health Organization. But I have to say that I'm especially betrayed and heartbroken by the lack of response of the UN Women. I'm the former director of the Authority for the Advancement of the Status of Women. I met with the director last year in the big commission on the status of women in the UN. We were talking, she's Jordanian, and we talked about how much we have to work together in combating violence against women. And I really, truly believed, not only in regard to UN Women and all organizations, feminist organizations, I really, truly believed in sisterhood and solidarity. I myself protested for British women, for American women, for Iranian women, for Yazidi women, you know, all the women of the world who needed someone to stand up for them. I and my feminist Israeli Jewish friends protest for them. And when something like this happens to us, the world, the professional feminist world, most of it is silent.
Why?
Or condemning Israel, which is unbelievable. Why? My answer is two, and it's not a good answer. It's either anti-Semitism, which is definitely my answer to why UN Women is silent, but also ignorance. And that's where I think is our most influence, where we can give the facts to people who are ignorant, but are willing to listen. That's the most important place we can, you know, make change.
Have you been speaking to these people on a personal basis who are involved in these UN agencies to try to understand, again, what feels like a basic lack of sympathy and empathy towards Israeli victims?
I've been lecturing about this anywhere that is willing to hear. And I open my lecture in saying, thank you for being here to bear witness with us. It's not something fun to hear about, but it's important because you cannot look away from this. If you look away from everything that all these atrocities that happened, but especially this, you're setting us back in our achievements as feminists, as women, years back. The Me Too movement was silent, is still silent about
right,
this.
Right, there's even that movement, Me Too, unless you're a Jew. That's
yeah,
been,
yeah, it's like a mantra, but it's true.
I mean, I've been slightly confused. This slogan, believe all women, believe Israeli women, because we have a few survivors, but actually most of the victims were massacred. I mean, they're dead, that there is no one left to speak, and what we have is the forensic evidence. It's not a question about believing their word that they were assaulted, because but the victims were murdered afterwards.
There's a double standard for Israeli women.
Of course, we have to collect all the evidence and be very careful about how we collate it and build the evidentiary basis. But I've been surprised. You say anti-Semitism, ignorance. I've been slightly horrified by the mass denial, as if these rapes never happened. There was no sexual violence.
The movies are AI.
Okay, how could so many Jews fit in that oven? That kind of Holocaust-type denial. And there just seems to be this certain intersection of, I'll put it bluntly, anti-Semites and perverts who are demanding that Israel parade like more evidence, as if they want to see this suffering or see Israel prove it and put this pain on display. How do you explain the mass denial that we are seeing about the sexual atrocities of October 7th in light of the preponderant evidence?
The denial is pure anti-Semitism. You know, people are saying the movies that the terrorists themselves took in their GoPros and live streamed them, saying that this is AI. You know, I can't. And again, it's not only sexual violence. It's a whole story of people who came to slaughter, to humiliate. You know, it's what we're talking about is a piece of a huge story of different atrocities.
And this is a critical question that I want to ask you about, because I find myself in my work as a spokesman having to talk about these issues, but also having to tread this very careful line between showing the evidence and telling the truth to the world and reminding people what happened, but at the same time needing to be respectful of the dignity of the dead. And I find myself people saying, why don't you publicly release more of the images, more of the atrocities? And I say, because it was someone's daughter. And I want to bring up, actually, now we have the headline of a New York Times story that caused real shockwaves around the world.
Yes.
It was a very detailed investigation, interviewed dozens of witnesses, and it was called Screams Without Words, How Hamas Weaponized Sexual Violence on October 7th. And they brought the story of Gal Abdush, who I remember first seeing the image of her when I saw the famous 43-minute atrocity video, burned to a charcoal at the Nova Festival, her genitals exposed, but her whole body is burned to a charcoal. She was clearly the victim of barbaric sexual assault on October 7th. And this New York Times story gave her a face, introduced her family, told her story. And I'm wondering, how do you feel about stories like this? People want to see the evidence.
Yeah.
And this is presenting the evidence to the world, but you need to remain respectful of this was ultimately a human being.
Well, I'm in the same position as you in my field. And
I'm trying to judge my words very carefully.
Yeah,
the whole
you're
thing
right.
Makes me want
and,
to throw
and,
up.
And I think that's the answer. You have to judge your words in regard to the audience you're talking to and how much it will go public. You know, I grew up as a professional in the rape crisis centers, and that's a very, there's a very strong ideology of, you know, not revealing anything without the victim's consent and them,
which
you know,
is impossible when they've been murdered.
It's yes, yes. Yeah. And this is, you know, this is my DNA. This is my core. But also I took upon myself this mission to tell the story and tell the narrative of what happened on October 7th. This is something that a lot of times people turn away from when you want to talk about sexual assault and in general. They would say all the horrible things that happen. And then about sexual assault, there would be like a bold line. I'm talking about Israeli media. There was also
because
indication.
It's so horrific, you don't want to believe it.
Is it more horrific than decapitating people? I don't know. And at the beginning, at the first second, I thought, oh, wow, we're you know, maybe it's a good thing. They're guarding, you know, it's from the good reasons. But immediately I again rethought it and thought, no, this is something that it brings out the wrong message to the victims. We cannot, your story is so horrible. We cannot hear about it. To the public, this is not to be spoken. It's something to cover, you know. We can talk about everything, burning families, but this sexual assault we cannot talk about, and it's the wrong message. And we really did work with the media. You have to tell this story. And if we, you know, compare this to the Holocaust testimonies, you hear testimonies of the worst acts man-made, you know, a person did, but stories about rapes and sexual assault are hardly heard, only maybe in the last few years. And this is something I want to prevent. This is part of the story, and it needs to be told in, you know, in according to the audience. If you're interviewing at 8 in the morning, you can insinuate about things. But
going forward, what are the next stages of collecting evidence, making this part of the public record? Because you've said you think that this is the tip of the iceberg. When are we going to discover some of the rest of the iceberg?
So there's a lot of footage. I mean, talking about massive quantity of footage that hasn't been going.
Footage of what?
Footage from the GoPros of the Hamas. Things that are being brought now from Gaza. Disk on keys, computers.
Right, we're still finding evidence on computers inside.
We're
recording this just soon after the IDF released footage of the Bibas family being abducted in Khan Yunus as a result of evidence extracted from Gaza.
Exactly. And also there are survivors and eyewitnesses who are taking care of themselves now. I hope they will find the strength and resilience to come forward and tell their story. I hope that as a society, we will be able to make the proper environment for them to find a place to tell also this story and not, you know, shut away or look away from sexual assault, like, you know, the instinct might. We need to bear witness. This is our responsibility.
So for those who have been bearing witness and people who are still watching this podcast, despite the really horrific nature of what we've been discussing, first of all, thank you. Thank you for bearing witness.
Yes.
People who want to do something with that anger, with that disgust, what can they do now to advocate on behalf of the victims of the sexual atrocities of October 7th and the hostages who are still trapped and we fear being raped in the Hamas terror dungeons? What can they do?
So I think, well, answering generally, it's important to identify each person has their circles of influence. It's either at your workplace, influence on your politicians, on your media or Instagram or Facebook or whatever. Find the circles of influence you have and talk about this subject also. You can respond to a post talking about, you know, denying or condemning Israel and talk about this part. Demand response from organizations you're part of. Demand response. I was visiting an amazing Jewish community. I was invited by a Jewish community in Canada, and they suddenly said, wait a second, we are donating to this women's health clinic. Every week we get their newsletter and they're asking us nicely to donate to them. And, you know, we're supporting them. It's like a very strong institute in their community. Where are they? Why are they not talking about this? This is something that happened to women and it has to be clear of politics. It doesn't matter where you stand in the conflict. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, speaking of Canada, I remember seeing that horrific report about the Rape Crisis Center that organized a protest in solidarity with Hamas instead of its victims.
But she was, and that's exactly an example of how influential, you know, people can be from even their home. They condemned it. They protest against her. And she was fired. We have power. And if we work together in our, you know, where we're sufficient with our influence, we can make change.
To wrap up, this was a lot to absorb. Yes. And people who are still watching this podcast will be wondering what they are supposed to do with all these feelings and process it. What do you recommend people who are finishing the end of this episode should do next in order to try to process and internalize what they have heard in a way that is not going to scar them for life?
Yes. Well, you know, you cannot unhear what you heard or unsee what you've seen. And there's a lot of, you know, very horrific footage and things people have been exposed to. It's really important to be aware of how you're feeling and to notice any change of behavior or it's very important to be aware and to reach out for help. I would very much recommend the Rape Crisis Centers. It's 1202 in Israel, 1203. You get response from a male. There's the hotline of the Ministry of Welfare, 118 in Israel, or anyone who's listening worldwide. It's important to talk about, to be aware to yourself, talk about things, and to reach out for help from a friend, from your community, from a partner, and you know, not stay with this anxiety with yourself, because it doesn't go away. It sinks in and it influences you. I've seen it too many times. So lean on someone if you feel that you're...
Ayelet Rosin-Bedor, thank you very much for coming to the State of the Nation podcast. And thank you for the work that you are doing as well. It's not easy. I'm sure it's taking a mental and emotional toll. So I hope you're leaning on people.
Thank you.
Thank you. Really, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode of the State of a Nation podcast. As always, if you, enjoy is the wrong word in the context of this podcast, but appreciate the podcast, please do subscribe, follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And more important than that, if you have experienced or borne witness to rape or sexual assault, please do make sure that you are getting the help that you need. As Ayelet said, here in Israel, you can call the Association of Rape Crisis Centers 1202. For women, 1203, if you prefer to get a response from a man. If you're following this podcast from outside Israel, there are counterpart organizations all around the world that will be happy to give you an attentive ear and shoulder and help you process any trauma that you have experienced or borne witness to. So thank you very much for joining the State of a Nation podcast. I'm Elon Levy, and we'll be back soon with more episodes.